Professor Dugan, it's once again an honor to meet with you, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me once again. I think that we have a lot of interesting things potentially to talk about, but I'd first like to say that I think recently there has been some controversy among left circles with respect to your fame. I think that Slavoj Žižek recently has written something insinuating that you are a dangerous, potentially fascist thinker, as well as many claims are misinformation claims are disseminating online, making these allegations. Now, I personally am familiar with your work and familiar with your readings, but this is an age of people who have short attention spans and difficulty taking the time, and they prefer getting their information through video and through online. So I wanted to take this opportunity to discuss with you, why do you think people make these accusations, and what would be your response to them, that the notion that you are somehow a fascist or adjacent to fascism or something like that?
So, first of all, I'm openly illiberal. So I deny liberalism from the beginning to the end, from the roots of nominalism, of that was criticized very interestingly by Richard Weaver, American political philosopher, conservative philosopher, so by many others. So I'm I reject radically a metaphysical basis of liberalism, individualism, modernity, idea of progress, linear time, and I am not I reject as well Enlightenment in general and modernity, Western modernity, as hegemonic process. So in that sense, I have elaborated in more than 100 books that I have written a kind of systematic critics of the Western modernity, developing the concept of René Guénon, traditionalist philosophy, Martin Heidegger, the pessimistic tradition of the Western authors like Spengler, and I accept that. So I'm enemy of open society because I consider that open society is hegemonic, totalitarian, liberal fascist concept, and it define all those who don't share the liberal premises of individualism, the negative liberty, the liberty from. This liberalism consider those who refuse that, who deny that, as the enemy of open society, who are, in their opinion of liberals, either communists or fascists. But understanding that possibility, I have developed my position outside of communism and fascism. So being illiberal, being enemy of open society and all the premises of all theoretical and political and practical constructions based on liberalism, modernity, and this enlightenment. At the same time, I refuse communism and fascism. And I have written my book, Fourth Political Theory, that clearly stated my position. But liberal, they have no frame for that. For example, if you are not liberal, you should be either fascist or communist. So you could not be illiberal or enemy of open society, not being something else than communist and fascist. So that is totalitarian approach to my way of thought. If you accuse me for not being liberal, I agree. For to be against political modernity of the West, I agree. And that is not, I don't consider that as insult. So I agree because I share such a liberal agenda. But if you say that I am either fascist or communist, I deny that because I am not. I have spoken with Tucker Carlson in Moscow, and we agreed on many points, on more than we could imagine. And one of the points, Tucker Carlson asked me, why they considered you fascist? And I have asked the same question, and why they consider you as fascist in the United States. And we agreed that if we would, with Tucker Carlson, be fascist, we would confess that because we are against all the political correctness. We could say the things that couldn't please to the majority, to mainstream. And we did, we do that, and we indeed agree that we are against this liberal agenda. But we are not fascists with him, and but I should prove that. So I could take arguments from far right, from right, from center, from left, from extreme left, and I, in my first political theory, I freely manipulate from with postmodernism, cultural anthropology, anti-racist, anti-nationalist elements and doctrine are taken from the left thought, rejecting their materialism, atheism, and progressism. But I take some elements from right political philosophy, hierarchy, traditional values, and other things. But that is something new. And liberals could not, could they don't want to make effort in order to interpret correctly this forced political theory. Inside of forced political theory, that is anti-liberalism, but not neither communist nor fascist, there are many things the liberal could blame myself for. And I agree with that perfectly. But if you say, for example, that I am a liberal, yes, I am against democracy. Maybe sometimes for me, democracy is not the religious highest value. You could say that I'm against woke. Yes, I'm radically anti-woke. I think that the wokeism is a form of liberal totalitarianism. But if you say I am fascist, I say no. I would accept that if I would be fascist. So no problem, no problem. If I would be communist, I would say the same. But I am neither communist nor fascist. I am fourth political theory. And in my many, many, many articles, interview, works, books, and lectures, I in from different point of view, inside of different humanitarian and social disciplines, I'm trying to develop my world vision, my Weltanschauung, taking elements from different political schools critical to liberalism, but not following some of them as something sectarian. So I am neither fascist nor communist, but illiberal. If you say you are liberal, I say yes. If you say you are communist or fascist, I say no. And that's all. And once interesting, there was the Jabotinsky, a certain Zionist, who has said once very interesting thing. Jewish Zionist thinker, he has said that, please, brethren Jews, stop accuse people who don't recognize themselves anti-Semite to be anti-Semite. There are so many real anti-Semites, so many people who confess they are anti-Semites. So let's fight against them. If someone deny being anti-Semite, let believe him. So yeah, there are so many new fascists, racist, nationalist, that who openly recognize that, please fight them. If you want to fight against forced political theory, please get deeper in this system. Try to find a weak point. Try to find a weak arguments. And that will be completely different. But don't reduce something you don't like or who is the enemy of the open society to the cliches you have. So that is incorrect from an intellectual point of view.
So it seems to me that within not only the liberal, but the specifically Western liberal point of view, there is a strange fascination with fascism as the only horizon of a post-liberal outlook. So much so that, for example, after the post-war period, they started to claim that communist states were actually red fascism, and that all communists who were not aligned with liberalism, Marxist, Leninist, or Stalinist, or Maoist for that matter, are red fascists. Meanwhile, the compatible left, social democrats, Trotskyists, and so on, were never accused of this label. So, but on the other hand, it is true that even the thinkers of the German conservative revolution, many of them seem to have also made this mistake of trying to articulate a post-liberal vision of politics and viewing in fascism the zeitgeist of that. So do you have any thoughts on where does this fascination with fascism specifically come from, where the only way to be illiberal in the eyes of liberals and in the eyes of Western thinking in general, maybe, including people who came from the right as well with the conservative revolution, why is there this privileging of fascism?
I think that there are two normal poles of attraction for all illiberal, more or less anti-capitalist political groups: Stalinism or socialism, and Hitlerism or fascism. So that was logical, historically logical, because outside of liberalism or international capitalism, that now is the basis of woke, of globalism, of liberalism, that they still, until January 2025, they will be still in power on global scale until Trump comes in the office. So that is not something abstract. The liberals rule, and they represent them one of the main political tendency that incorporates in it modernity, the zeitgeist of modernity. So modernity is liberal, and liberalism, one of the three main political theories, fought for the that status to be unique and the main representative of the spirit of the modernity, of enlightenment, of the individualism, of the post-traditional world. And inside of the Western political thought, and not outside of the Western political thought, there were two alternatives: communism and fascism. And both of them, fascism and communism, they have managed to have to take the power in the two big countries, or more, in Soviet Union and Russia, and Great Russia, and in the Germany and Italy, so in other places. So we had two very, very impressive examples how you can create not liberal or illiberal system, political system, in the reality, and they are poles of the natural attraction for all illiberal minds. But you could be that is normal, because, for example, the Stalinism was a so huge phenomenon with special style, with amount of power, and geopolitically successful. And that was, and we could win Second World War thanks to Stalinism. So Stalinism and Stalin is the figure of attraction to the left, to the illiberal left. And Hitler and Mussolini, Hitler more, were attraction for illiberal right. And that was logical, because Hitler With all the atrocities committed against the people, with all the ethnical cleansing, and with all the crimes committed by regime, as in the case of Stalin, he still represents some success, political success, electoral success, industrial success, economical success, military success until certain point. So that was the example how illiberal political system could be possible. But in my opinion, that is simplistic manner to understand the criticism to liberalism, because communism and fascism are two traps of a liberal thought. So conservative revolution was not fascist, was not Nazi. That it was partly aligned with Hitler and partly the other part of the conservative revolution movement made alliance with anti-Hitler coalition, anti-Hitler tendencies inside of Germany as well. So I think that communism and fascism are two successful illiberal political theories that had and still have some doctrines, not just reaction, some system, some philosophy, but it is simplistic way. So my idea is to overcome communism and fascism because they are part of the same Enlightenment spirits, because they belong to the same Western modernity. They are atheistic, materialistic, and in order to fight liberalism, we need to overcome all the philosophical, all the historical, religious, and political elements of Western modernity. We need to overcome not only liberalism, but as well two most attractive or most developed alternative inside of political modernity, Western political modernity.
Yes, but it's also curious, though, because Stalinists, for example, like myself, I regard myself as a Stalinist, Marxist-Leninist, whether during, in Stalinist states or today, for some reason, Stalinists will call Nazis Nazis, but they will not recognize Stalinists as Stalinists. They will say that Stalinists are false Marxists and that they're actually red fascists. So there does seem to be something within the liberal view that privileges fascism as the only alternative.
That maybe it is easy with a reduction at Hitlerum. It's easy to deal with your enemies. For example, if you start to criticize liberalism, they say, "Oh, you are responsible for killing 6 million Jews, and that's all."
To shut down
everybody. Yeah. That is the kind of demonization of the...
It's curious, though, because in Ukraine, with the Maidan coup, we did see simultaneously, as much as we have Hitler as the tool to shut down discourse, liberals had no problem entering into an alliance with Hitlerites in practice. More than once, actually. The first time was with Chamberlain and the appeasement in the mid to late 1930s. And then the second time was during the Cold War with the United States and the CIA. But the most recent example was Ukraine with Maidan, where liberals walked hand in hand with neo-Nazis. So I wonder if this fascination with fascism that liberals have might reflect that fascism might itself be a secret tendency of liberalism, maybe in a state of emergency. The only one it's willing to recognize.
Maybe, because, for example, if we regard the history of the racist thought, the roots of the racism were liberal. That was the colonial Anglo-Saxon, British creation, racism, and that was very, very strange to Germany. That was introduced into Germany by the British. So that racism and nationalism both are very, very English, Anglo-Saxon phenomenon, very close to that. So, what is important? It is important that the fascism should serve to liberal liberals. If it serves to liberals, so that is not fascism. There is some alternative to liberalism, and liberalism doesn't like it. It makes the famous reduction to ad Hitlerum. But if, for example, you are patriot, American patriot in the United States, and you don't like liberals, you will be, for sure, you will be stigmatized as fascist. And if there are some real fascist, racist, nationalist killers who rape women and destroy civil population, but it is a lie of liberals, for example, in the case of the Ukrainians, of Zelensky, that is Nazi regime, or in the case of Israel. So if you are a lie or of liberals, you are not fascist. So that is very interesting. The same people from the West who supported most Ukrainian fascism and Nazism, they fought against Russian patriotic thought, Russian leftists, rightists, no matter. Calling the opposite the fascist. So, but because the liberals are in charge of the global international media, they could say this fascist is not fascist. This not fascist is fascist. So let's kill those who we point out at, and let help those we point out. So that is how the real liberal dictatorship and globalist fascism works. So you should believe them, because if you don't believe them, you are fascist. You are yourself.
Even if they are allied openly with fascists, so they have this power through discourse, yes, to create reality how they see fit. And like, if Hitler was alive today, they could say that Hitler was a progressive Democrat, and they could accuse anti-Hitler people.
They say as well that about Zelensky, yeah, who is war criminal, who is perpetrator of awful terroristic acts, and he still is the hero of liberalism. So that is the special evolution or involution of the liberalism that is now purely totalitarian. Yes. That is why you have a illiberal or post-liberal revolution in United States. It is about that. The people is tired. The American people is tired of all that.
Yeah, and it's incredibly terrifying, that discursive power to basically, even if there are fascist crimes occurring, as long as we're in the liberal frame, we won't know it. We would be completely blind to it. And, you know, in my view, that should be a pause for thought for anti-fascists, that you could be thinking that you're an anti-fascist, meanwhile you are excusing and facilitating and collaborating in real fascism.
And racism,
yes, precisely. Now, speaking of people participating in this taking for granted of liberal hegemony as the sole horizon of truth, Slavoj Žižek has recently made some interesting, to be very generous, comments with respect to your engagement with Lacan. I think many people were actually surprised in your interest in Lacan. Many people have this perception that you are a close-minded thinker who completely dismisses, the tradition of thought in the West and so on and so on. But, you know, I know that you have engaged with it pretty extensively, and for some reason this provoked Žižek into responding. So I'm not sure if you have already responded or commented on it, but what are your thoughts on this?
So I read Žižek, and Žižek doesn't read me. I have read the book of Bernard Levy before making debates with him, and he didn't read any page of my works, basing his ideas on Wikipedia and so on. The same with Žižek. So it is not serious. And he was touched, Žižek, because of my application of Lacanian system to analysis of Trump's election, but I am mastering many different theory, psychoanalysis, sociology of imagination, anthropology of different kind, ethnosociology, philosophy, phenomenology, but all that doesn't fit in the figure of very narrow-minded Russian fascist that denies anything that comes from the West. So that is the kind of short circuit that is cognitive dissonance, that is how the chimeras operate inside of the brain, the so-called intellectuals. Mm-hmm. In order to say some words about some philosophers, you need to study him first. And after that, and after having enough knowledge of his ideas, you could start to argue. But who cares, thinks Žižek or Bernard Levy. It is written in Wikipedia that he is pro-Putin. That's all. It's clear. So let's blame him. Let's cancel him. Let's put their books from Amazon. That was the best decision. And Žižek was seriously surprised that I could cite Lacan or apply Lacanian analysis to the American elections. I could repeat that, it's easy. So, you know, Lacanian system is based on reality, the real, the symbolic, and the imaginary. So imaginary is the frozen symbolism, the frozen and alienated figures from our subconsciousness. So there is the conventional wisdom that only left, a liberal left, could manage to create this attractive symbolic system, and the right or Trumpists, the narrow-minded people who operate only with the alienated, frozen images of imaginary. And I have made a kind of analysis that this time imaginary it is Biden and Trump, and Trump represents symbolic, more dynamic, the kind of alt-right was very active and very famous in that they have created ironic reality, some psychedelic style to promote
surrealism,
surreal Trumpism, yeah. And that was decisive element in the victory of the Trump, because this time the subconsciousness of American society was on the side of Trump.
What you're basically saying is that Biden kind of represented this clueless, naive realism is the word they use, where they don't understand the disjuncture between symbolic and imaginary, and Trump represented an acknowledgement.
And liberation from imaginary, their liberty or revolution of the dream. That was a kind of dream American dream that worked as irrational, symbolic.
So in the Lacanian scheme, they would call this, you know, this would be like the process of the traversal of the fantasy, is what they would say.
Exactly.
And you see hints of this and signs of this coming more from this dissident kind of orientation that's unleashed as a consequence of Trump's.
Exactly. Trump's. And the people who are bearers of this liberational left unconscious symbolism came to Trump as a very strange person, Kennedy or Tulsi Gabbard. So I think that this symbolic left changed the camp.
So I know we don't.
And Musk as well. Musk was not from the beginning, neither right nor traditionalist. Now he came from the same narcotic, easy drugs, Silicon Valley, techno elite.
They call it the Californian ideology.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
So I know we don't have a ton of time to explore these topics because they're very in depth, but You know, Lacan, many people would think is just the pure epitome of Western-centric thought. Lacan has two major influences that I think do place him in proximity with Russian traditions, maybe. One is through the Saussure and the structuralist tradition, which was influenced by Russian formalism from the early 20th century. And then the second was from Alexander Kojève, who was a Russian immigrant to France, who drew from Soloviev and so on and so on. And I think a common denominator between both of these traditions is some kind of recognition of a disjuncture between the reality of pure empirical naive realism on the one hand, and then the horizon of meaning through logos, right? So for Kojève, that's the universal and homogeneous state of pure form and recognition. And then for Lacan and for the structuralist tradition, that's the kind of semiotic reality of signs. And then Lacan elaborates that as the symbolic. Do you think there's anything particularly Russian about this acknowledgement of the maybe relative autonomy of logos with respect to a kind of naive empirical realism that in the Anglo-Saxon tradition is regarded as the true reality?
Maybe I didn't think about that. Very interesting remarks. But about Lacan, I would like to stress one point. He wasn't left. Lacan himself, what in his youth, he was monarchist. He was nationalist. Yeah. And it is not just political attraction of youth. If we consider his system and his position toward French Revolution of 68,
yeah,
he was
extremely
skeptical. Why? But there is...
They wanted a new master.
In my opinion, the reason for that was deeper. Because according to Lacanian system, if you try to put symbolic in the place of imaginary, you will receive the same imaginary.
Psychosis.
That will be the other a frozen reality, the other naivety. And you could not construct a society without this distinction. If left comes to power, it will create the concentration camp. That is always the case, because concentration camp is imaginary, put as something absolute. The only way, for example, if left wins, it becomes fascist. If right wins, it became fascist. But if you still could accept this duality and inevitability of transformation of the symbolic into imaginary as the general rule of psychology, of society, or social psychology, you will be very careful with all kind of revolutions or pretensions that let overcome them.
It reminds me actually of Hegel's critique of the French Revolution, which was later elaborated in the philosophy of right, where the real freedom only comes through the mediation rather than making immediate the universalism and the freedom.
Yes, exactly. And so, Hegel has suggested that in order to get one step more in the history, toward the end of history, you need to overcome civil society. The civil society is just the momentum. Mm-hmm. It is not the destiny. Yeah. And that is the difference between Hegelian philosophy and communism or liberalism.
I will share a little bit of a defense of the Stalinist tradition with respect to this, because I think what Lacan was critiquing was anarchism, the left libertarian, kind of anarchistic and Trotskyist. But I think the Stalinist tradition, beginning with the Bolsheviks, actually, there is a profound regard for the reality of the mediation. For example, Stalin's acquiescence to the need for socialism in one country, that was a compromise that was, well, not necessarily a retreat, but from the perspective of the Trotskyist view, that was. And so I think there is also space there, which is, and I think the word for this is it's dialectics, right? It's a dialectical outlook that regards...
Or realism, or Lacanian realism. So if you are fighting for the power, being proletarian, being suppressed, being slaves, when you come to power, you become master, oppressor, and father of the people. So, and Biden and liberals, Soros, they do the same. So there is no exception. The power is the place that could not be transformed in some other nature. So the power is always something like Stalin, Hitlerism, or Bidenism, or a global government. There is dictatorship. That is dictatorship of the imaginary. You could not destroy that or replace by something other. You could just find the way to transform that. In the positive sense, making the power more and more irrational, more and more as dream. So more subconsciousness could not be liberated totally. It should be under some level, as for example, perversions or sins.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They exist, they are necessary, but if you say the sin is not sin anymore, you transform it is in the form of dictatorship. Sin should be recognized as sin, and he will work inside of your unconsciousness correctly. And what is good and what is right should exist on the level of the imaginary. And there is no big difference who defines that. Mm-hmm. So we need to accept the plurality of the human being in all the elements, not trying to eliminate imaginary, on symbolic.
So for Lacan's traversal of the fantasy, it ends up being an acknowledgement of the irreducibility of the gap between the symbolic and imaginary.
In that sense, he was conservative. Conservative in that sense.
I agree to an extent. Yes, I think that is conservative with respect to the liberalism, to anarchism, to liberal leftism and the prevailing tendency in the French Revolution. But I also think that there is an element of conservative Stalinism here, though, because, for example, Stalin's writings on language were actually very, to the extent of my knowledge, very famous and influential in France. And I read somewhere this actually ended up influencing Lacan, because Stalin very famously, in his intervention on this debate that was happening in the Soviet Union on the status of language, is it just the consequence of, is it the superstructure? Is it just a reflection of underlying material relations, or what is the status, right? And Stalin had a provoking contribution to Marxism. Stalin regarded language not as a superstructure, but more like a fundamental base, a material base. So this means the nihilism, the nihilistic tendency of Western materialism was rejected. For Stalin, logos had kind of absolutely irreducible accumulation of the total history that was not inherently proletarian, not inherently bourgeois, not inherently serving this class or that class, but language as such, as a horizon of reality that is somewhat still at a distance, you know. And I think that I think it is a profoundly Hegelian intervention within Western philosophy of acceptance of distance and acceptance of gaps as the ultimate kind of reconciliation. And yes, that is conservative, but simultaneously, I also think that it's not simply passive acceptance of the status quo. Because
no, absolutely, because the status quo is never status quo. Status quo is big dynamism, and the status quo could be very rich when symbolism is acting actively and acting through the imaginary. When we recognize this irrational side, not trying to overcome, not trying to interpret or explain. We should regard irrational side as it is and rational side as it is, we need to accept them both. And if we succeed in that, that we will, that status quo will be very, very, very rich and very dynamic. But if we try to reduce irrational to rationality rationality to something material, so if we are reductionists, we transform status quo in something very plain, something without very thin in that sense.
In my opinion,
I think maybe to conclude. In my opinion, I think that this leads us to a somewhat paradoxical or interesting, maybe dialectical insight that this precise conservatism we're talking about, that Lacan demonstrates, that's in Hegel, is actually the most revolutionary.
Exactly. I'm partisan of conservative revolution, because conservative revolution, it is not just paradox. All revolution has in its very archaic roots, and and that they are conservative, and all conservatism is as well a challenge to the status quo, because it is a kind of invitation to the eternal dimension of the depth in the human society, human being. So conservatism is always fresh and new and dynamic and progressive in some sense. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I think it's good. Mr. Dugin, thank you so much for taking the time today. It was a very good discussion, and I hope everyone will walk away with something interesting from it. Thank you.